Record. Okay. We're recording. So this is Project Yitro, right? I got this right. Yes. And I said, dear bro, this is a big one. This is the dramatic part. This is where it all comes together. So I've talked about Zohar Atkins before, haven't I? One of the previous years. He's an interesting guy. He's got he has a doctorate of philosophy from Oxford. He has rabbinic ordination from JTS. And he's a lot of fun to read. And so this is mostly based on his article, which I think everybody should read. It's called Creation is Great, but Have You Tried Revelation?
Oh, you're not really selling your shear here.
I'm not really selling my shear.
With your line about, why don't you just leave and go read this article?
Yes, that's what I actually think. That this was great, and you should just read this and be done, and I'll just go back to sleep. But I will leave you to look this one up, okay? You can go online, you can click on the title, and you can do this. So I'm going to kind of show you what he's saying, but I'm going to say what I'm going to say. But he starts out talking about the fact that theologians and philosophers have long puzzled the question, why did God create the world? Or if you're not religious, it's why is there something and not nothing? That's the big question. The Torah does not give us an explicit answer to this age-old question. We are not permitted to read God's mind, assuming we're even legible. But that hasn't stopped us from speculating. To me, this is the great metaphysical question, the alpha of all searches, the vanishing point at which all disciplines converge.
What a beautiful sentence.
I just love reading him. Okay, but with this week's part, Torah reading, Yitro, raise a question that I find equally, if not more compelling. Why does God reveal God's self to us? Now, if he's liberal enough, he doesn't want to say him or her with respect to Hashem, so why reveal God's self to us, right? Why revelation? Why not just create the world? Why does God simply place a chip in our brains with the Torah is pre-installed? Okay, I can get the Bar-Ilan database, or, you know, in a little USB port. Why does Hashem need to come down in this massive, spectacular special effects show and say, here's what's going on? If it's true, why don't we already know that? Alternative, why does God move by an invisible hand, allowing us to derive all the Torah contains through a combination of reason and experience, where we think about Abraham deriving the Torah? He didn't have the Avot did not have a revelation experience. Why, according to Torah, does God appear and appear at Sinai? Numerous solutions are proposed over the years. One common answer offered by rational theologians is that so we should know God, to know that God, and not the human mind, is the source of all knowledge. It's clear to us that we didn't figure this out. That seems weak, though. After all, couldn't God simply program us to know that? So he's going to look at the first commandment. So the question about that, well, not a question. Is that a commandment? Doesn't look like a commandment. There's no thou shalt in that statement. I am the Lord, the God who took you out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. And the Torah never calls the Asara Dibro commandments. We call them that in English. But in the Torah, it's Asara HaDvarim, right? Just statements. That's the way.
Where's the word commandments from? Like, where? Where did that enter our lexicon?
Yeah.
I don't know whether the King James has that. That's a good question. So I'm curious. Now I'm going to ask that. How does the King James translate that particular pasuk in Devarim? Right, because what it's talking about is, you got the Chemetz Brito, and Hashem told you his covenant, Asher Tzivarchem, that he did command you last so to do, Asher HaDvarim. Right, that's what most
okay, so the word tziva is there.
You're right, yeah. So they're commandments. So it's ambiguous. It's not clear that you commanded the 10 things. So are these 10 commandments? Or it's a set of things that include commandments. There certainly are commandments in there about Shabbos and don't, you know, take my name in vain and all that.
Well, it says la'asot, which implies some kind of some action.
Yeah, but are there 10 of them?
Read it again.
There are 10 statements, of which some of those are truly commandments. Mm-hmm.
All right, like when you were, if you're writing a note to somebody, you might say, I'm going to tell you 10 things to do and make sure you do all those things. You would have words of introduction.
New International Version does say, uses the term 10 commandments. Let's go back over here, Bible Gateway. King James. Yep, that's where it's from. He declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments. And he wrote them upon two tables of stone. So King James, Jacob was probably that committee, decided to translate the commandment. So the way the Rambam's school is that this is a commandment. This is the introduction to Mishneh Torah, and he's the one who invented the, you start all your books with the Yud Kei Vav Kei, Yesod HaYesodot V'Amud HaChachamot.
How cool.
That is a thing. A lot of Sfarim will start with that acronym in the beginning. But the principles and the pillar of all wisdom, Leidash Yesh Matsui Rishon. There is a prime mover. There is something that created the world. Uhu Mamsi Kol Insan, he is the cause of all that exists. Kol Imsi'im Shamayim Ba'aretz U'mashu Be'nehem Lo Nimsu Elu Emitatim Matsu. And everything. This is only as a derivation of that Matsui Rishon's existence. And there is a commandment to know this. Right? It's a declarative statement, but the mitzvah is you should know this fact that God exists. And so the Ramban on this says that when he's commenting on the Sefer HaMitzvah. So the Sefer HaMitzvah, the Rambam, was the Rambam's outline that of 613 mitzvot, but the Gemara says there are 613, so he wrote that these are the 613, and Sefer Mitzvot is basically the one-liner for each one that he's going to expand in the Mishneh Torah. It's the outline for the Mishneh Torah, and he has an introduction of how does he count as 613, what counts as a 613. But before the Rambam, there were one of the Gaonim wrote what's called the Halachot Gedolot. So the Baal HaLachot Gedolot wrote a list of 613 mitzvot.
This is the Bahag?
The Bahag, right.
Bahag.
That's a different list than the Rambam's. He has different criteria of what it counts. Because the Torah doesn't say, here are 613. It's just, the Torah doesn't say anything about 613. The Gemara says there are 613. So that comes the outline. So the Bahag doesn't mention the mitzvah of believing. So the Ramban, commenting on the Rambam, defends the Bahag, even though he says throughout the Ramban always says, yeah, the Rambam's probably right, but we can't dismiss the Bahag because Bahag's a gone, we have to think about him. So he spends his time trying to think about what the Bahag means. So the Nirim Bidata Shabbal Halachot looks like the Bahag's reasoning. She'em minyan Taryag Mitzvot El Gezerot Tav Yitaleh, that the Taryag Mitzvot, 613 Mitzvot, are the commandments of things that you're supposed to do. Things we should do or things we shouldn't do. But believing in God's existence, believing in God's existence, that God revealed to us with all these signs and wonders, that is the beginning of faith. You can't count that as a mitzvah because you can't command the faith, because the only reason you listen to commandments is because you already believe. You have to start from believing in God and believing God commanded this in order for the other commandments to make any sense. For God's command, you shall believe in me.
You would translate lada'at to believe. Right, no belief, same thing.
So, for the Rambam would make a distinction there. Rambam is very much the philosopher, and he wants that to mean no, in some epistemological sense of that you need to have reasoned this one out and be clear in your mind, independent of belief, that it is true.
Well, it's also different because for this generation, they were the ones who left Mitzrayim, who saw everything, and then God is saying, I was one who did that. It's not a belief like, we don't really know what happened all those years ago, but we believe that such a thing may have happened. It's like a different, it feels very different. For them, it's more of like a, it is more of like that no. It's not like, you don't have to believe, like, but for somebody like us, where, like, I don't know, I didn't see it, you know? So it feels like a different commandment for us than it would be for them.
It may have been, but the question is, it still is it a commandment at all? Does it make sense to have that as a commandment?
Right. But I feel like for them, you don't need it as a commandment. It's a statement of fact. Like, hey guys, that person, that was me. For us, right. It needs to be a commandment.
As opposed to... Okay, that's true. And that's one way of approaching why it says, Asher Tziticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Because that was personal, that was immediate. We can go a little bit different direction. Because I'm going to look at the way Zohar Hapkins puts it. And he says that, he looks at it is, yes, it's a commandment. It's not to believe in God. It doesn't say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, because again, that's, you either know it there, you start out with that. But it's to say that it's possible to have a personal relationship with Hashem. And he starts with a Gemara. This is a Gemara in Shabbos. Amar Shlakish, my dektiv, ayer revoke yom hashishi. We all know this. It says, creation. It says, yom hashishi. Heyitera lamoli. That's the sixth day, is the only day it says the sixth day. Everything else is yom rishon, yom sheni, yom shlishi, yom revi, yom chamishi, yom hashishi. Why the hey? Mohamed, because he's saying that there was actually, it wasn't Friday of the week of creation. It was referring to a specific sixth day. Hashem made a condition. He made a deal with all of creation. When Marlahem told creation, in Israel, if Bnei Israel, whatever it is, 2,500 years later, accepted Torah, then you will continue to exist. If not, I'm just going to undo the whole thing and go back to Tohu Vavohu. So Hashishi is talking about the sixth day of Sivan, the day of Matan Torah.
Oh.
And it was day and night for, and it was held in abeyance. The whole creation is conditioned on this, on the sixth day.
Oh. That's pretty cool.
Never heard that before.
Nope. Okay.
That's it. And that goes that, and similarly, that Hashem tells Bnei Israel, if you accept the Torah, great. If not, I will return the universe to Tohu Vavohu. This is the way he puts it. And this Atkins has an S there. I think this passage is analogous to an artist who says if their artwork is not just appreciated, they will destroy it. Hashem wants the universe to be appreciated. Hashem needs to be, as it were, needs to be recognized. Speaking of a God that takes people out of slavery is philosophically absurd. That a philosopher's God is just the forces of an abstract force of nature. There's the laws of the universe. A God who cares about a people doesn't make any sense. But more philosophically absurd, I would argue, is a God who not only liberates, but seeks to be recognized as a liberator. Would we find the first commandment revealed in this week's parsha? So I understand that the commandment is not an abstract theological requirement, but an existential inside nature of Torah. The Torah is to be understood fundamentally as God's self-expression, God's entrusting God's self to us as readers and listeners. Shem is saying, here, this is me. I want you to be part of me. That's what giving the Torah was all about. And this is an essay, a wonderful essay by Meir Soloveitchik called Torah and Incarnation. So Meir Soloveitchik is the son of Aaron Soloveitchik, the nephew of he's writing an essay in First Things, which is really a Catholic journal.
He's the rabbi of the Portuguese synagogue now. Is that him?
Yes, that's him. Is he still there? I don't know if he's where he is right now, but yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So he's explaining why Jews love learning Torah. And it's analogous to the Eucharist in Catholicism, where the Catholics get to have a little part of the body of God. We don't do the body thing. We do the mind thing. Hmm. We get to participate in the mind of God. That's what he says. That's a Torah learning. Learning Torah proceeds from intense faith, but it's not merely a matter of faith. The encounter with divine place takes place through lifelong intellectual engagement with God's infinite mind, which surpasses all praise and by implication all belief. What then makes the Torah, the psalmist says, sweeter than honeycombs? He quotes C.S. Lewis, who didn't understand that in Tehillim, right? Why would you think it's sweet to learn Torah? The answer lies in the joy of discovering God's mind. Talmud Torah demands intense engagement with God's will in order to bring to light new facets of the divine mind. To study Torah leads to insight, and with every insight, there emerges a deeper sense of infinity of insights still hidden, waiting to be gleaned. Truly, as the infinite horizons of the Torah brings us to see, the mind of God is without limit. That's what we learn. That's what Anochi Hashem Elokecha is, that I am there with you, and you can be part of this. The Torah was given an invitation to the infinite expanse in the depths of his mind. Precisely what God, that's got to be capitalized there. Precisely what God refused to present himself in finite form. He didn't capitalize the pronouns in this article.
Oh.
Must be a theological point there. I'm going to edit that for me. The Torah is not God incarnate, is not a finite embodiment of God, is a bridge to divine infinity. God does not make himself finite. Through the Torah, he gives finite, fallible human beings the means to commune with his infinite mind. Through the nature of the law and its sanctifying regard for even the most minute of human actions, we can conceive of the loving nature of the lawgiver. In the infinitude of the Torah, we are given a glorious glimpse of the infinitude of the Almighty. Very, very poetic.
Torah. The word Torah, Danny, as Gemara and all that. Torah.
Right. Everything we'll learn. He's talking about really learning, and he talks about the fact that really this isn't a matter of halacha. He's very brisk. He's a Soloveitchik.
Uh-huh.
And when you're talking about the real details of halacha, that is what he's talking about.
One of my reactions is, this is beautiful. And how could someone read that and then think that women should not actively be encouraged to learn Gemara? I mean,
I have to be with you as well.
It's mind-boggling that, you know, I mean, this is just beautiful.
No, I agree with you completely. And my only hesitation is the kind of my joke I tell my kids is that I learned Torah like a girl. I'm doing the machshava. I'm looking at the Tanakh and the Machshava side of it, not so much the Gemara side of it. I know Jack talks about that. The only real thing is Gemara. And so the fact that I am, my connection to Torah in terms of my neshama is much more through the Machshava side of it. You know what I'm saying? The philosophical side rather than the halakhic side. I still think it's connected to Torah.
But you think Rabbi Soloveitchik, Meir Soloveitchik is, it doesn't feel like he's talking about delving into the details of halacha. It doesn't feel like
I encourage you to read this article here. Let's go click on it here. And
I
definitely encourage you to read this article since it comes up here.
Torah and incarnation. Torah learning bridges the gap. So by Torah learning, you don't think he means your kind of learning?
I think that's part of it. He very much does not. That isn't the real learning. Real learning, and you can read the article again. He is a Soloveitchik still, and okay. That you know the intellectual, the machshava side of the philosophy is interesting, but the real learning is in the chidushei halacha.
So
that
then
really is what he holds.
You have to believe that he is in favor of women delving deeply into Gemara.
I do not know him personally, but I believe that is the case.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. So that's that. So that's part of what Anochi is. The first commandment is not so much that Hashem exists. It's not Rambam's Matsui Rishon, which is the philosopher's God. Because again, it's absurd that the philosopher's God has any personal relationship. Not Spinoza's God is the universe. But the idea that you can have one relationship with human beings and that Hashem wants that relationship, right? It starts, the pasuk starts with Anochi, and the mitzvah in that is to believe that there is an Anochi, there's an I, referring to God. the difference between Midat Hadin and Midat Harachem. Midat Hadin is the philosopher, the scientific deist God. That's Elokim. This is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I. And that we can accept Hashem as an I, that there's some capital O, one, someone there. And so that idea that we can accept that Hashem has a relationship with us is why that Rav Soloveitchik says is what why it ends Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hutzeitichem Eretz Mitzrayim.
Right.
Right. And I took you out of Egypt, right? So I'm gonna believe in God.
Right. Not the God who created the world, but the Jew, the Israel.
If, if we take the way the Rambam wrote, it should be I am the one who created the world, the universe. Okay? And that's right. Where Rashi starts. Asher Hutzeitichem Eretz Mitzrayim. That hutzah, taking you out of Egypt, was enough that you should be obligated toward me, as Rav Soloveitchik puts it. Apparently, Rashi and Mechilta were bothered by the old problem. Why didn't the Almighty introduce himself to the creator of heaven and earth? Why not? Rashi answered that the fact of the creation is a source of the basis of the universal relationship between God and man. With creation, God is the ruler, God is the master. Within the covenantal community, God is not only ruler, law, and creator, but also a teacher, comrade, friend, and counselor. That the act of Yetziat Mitzrayim made us all part of a community with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Besides the Yerushalmi.
Also, it's Hotzei Ticha, right? It's not Hotzei Tichem. Like, it's very intimate.
Oh, it's
mm-hmm. Meaning it's singular, right? Like, it was you.
Yeah.
Not like you all. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice point. I like that.
And so he said, well, no, you're showing me the idea that Hashem went down to Egypt with them, right? That Hashem tells Yaakov, I will go with you and I will come back with you. Hashem was in exile as well. It's Tanya, Chanan ben Yachai, Yeshua Omer. So I have to edit that. Verse 12 to format. I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, and then you should read it not as Hotzei Ticha, but as Hotzei To. That he came out, that I came out, and the way the Torah Tamima reads this is Return Lomar Shebichol Gam Hu Ba'atzmo Yatzam Mishon, that God came out. I came out with you. Kamosh Ketuv Imo Inochei B'tzara. Hashem says, I am with you in your pain. Read it that way. Read it as it were. Midrashically, I went out with you. Hashem went out of Egypt as well. And this is the way Rav Soloveitchik puts it. We're both oppressed, we're both in bondage. God and us, in Israel, we both gain freedom. The singular relationship which binds God with man within one's fellowship is not result not of creation, but of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And it's interesting
but not
that
quite with man. Second, it's not with man, it's with Israel.
Israel, yes. And that becomes that there is a Brit Noah, which is with all humanity, and there is Brit Sinai, which is just with the Jews.
Yeah.
And that is a different relationship. And I assume we'll get to it. That's what the Tanakh Shir is going to be all about. Assume we get to it on Sunday. I've got that planned out. So this is going to overlap very much with the Tehillim and Psukkot Zimra.
Oh, lovely.
Interesting. The Psukkot Decalogue represents the first time that God took his name and changed it to a possessive noun. This is the first time he says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I'm your God.
This is the first time in all of Tanakh that we see that?
The Torah that you have the first term Elokecha, we have Elokei Avicha with Moshe, okay, Avraham Yisrael, you know, God of them, but Elokecha, your God. But his point is that is it where you own me? I am your property. God is telling Ben Israel, I'm yours. I own you as creator. You own me as a member of the covenant of the community.
Wow.
I'm telling you, I'm yours. And I say that's part of what Anochi Hashem Elokecha means, is Hashem is saying, I am yours. You need to recognize me to say that I am part of your community. That's what that's what the commandment is, to accept that relationship. So that's deep. But Eckes takes it actually in a different direction. So saying that there's a lesson there in our relationship with others as well. Because our goal, our purpose is in Ketia Day is to be just like Hashem, and the way, you know, just like God is merciful, you should be merciful. You need to be holy, just like God is holy. So he says that the fact that Hashem needs recognition, quotes needs,
your needs is very there. Cute quotes.
You have to fix that, Danny.
My quote, Marcy, going backwards.
Yeah, it looks kind of sweet.
No, I got to fix that. That's what I'm looking at here. I'm doing this. So it's the edit here. I need to fix the quotes. They're going the wrong way. The problem is that the program that formats this, which I wrote, so I know what's doing, sees that it's coming after a Hebrew word, so I figure it must be Hebrew, which needs to reverse the quotes for that. Not really.
Would you send me your program files? Do you have it like on GitHub or something?
Yes.
Can I see them?
Yeah, you have my GitHub ID is DWACHSS. Ewox.
It's two S's. Okay. It's two S's, but there's no T.
So the formatting is called, it's all Billy Light, as Billy Light Range does, and the edit has the editing stuff, and the Covenant parse down is the markup editor. Okay, but that's computer stuff, that's not Torah stuff. So that he quotes Francis Fukuyama, who's an interesting political philosopher who I've quoted before. Anyone know him? Heard of him? So no. He has papers actually about the end of history when the Soviet Union fell. He was wrong because history didn't end. We talked about the sort of this Hegelian look, which I think is a useful way of looking at Rob Cook's way of looking at Jewish history, but a separate story. But this is Hegelian? From a different book called Hegelian Dialectic of History.
What is that? Briefly.
Oh. Sorry. So Hegel was a philosopher who really developed the idea of a dialectic. There's a thesis and antithesis that come together with synthesis, and that there are stages of history, and you have forces that oppose each other and end up having to kind of come together. Then new forces come to oppose the old synthesis, and that Rav Cook really looked at the Arba Galiot. You know, we've been in exile in Babel and Paras and Yavan and Edom as being that kind of not so much specific nations, but of world concepts that need to be absorbed into our way, the Jewish way of looking at the world, and that we end up with this synthesis as we move through history, through all these various conflicts. That's a separate issue. I've talked about that before. The whole, what is the word Acharit HaYamim means the end of history. But this is Fukuyama's comment about identity. That the inner sense of dignity seeks recognition. It's not enough that I have a sense of my own worth if others do not publicly acknowledge it. Or worse yet, they denigrate me or don't acknowledge my existence. And Zohar is saying basically that's what Hashem is saying. Not that if you don't recognize me and destroy the world because you don't appreciate my creation. But if you don't recognize me as Anochi Hashem Elokecha, then you're not recognizing me, and there's just no point in creation. Hashem needs that recognition. That was a point of creation, but we need to learn that that's true of human beings as well. That human beings also need that recognition. Revelation only works if there's recognition to meet it. God lets God's self be recognized by ex-slaves, by those who have lived unrecognized. In so doing, God also shows the Israelites that they matter, that they have dignity, that they are seen. We follow Reish Lakish's reasoning. That's when he said that Hashem was going to destroy the world. It's not just that God would destroy the world if God were unrecognized, that God needs ex-slaves to be the ones who recognize God. Not coincidental that revelation of God at Sinai occurs right after the liberation of slaves from Egypt. The first commandment explicitly ties the two events together. Slaves are denied recognition and dignity by their owners. Who better than newly liberated slaves to grasp the power of being recognized? revealing God's self to us. God reveals to us the need to reveal ourselves to and be recognized by others. Receiving divine epiphany, we practice receiving the epiphanies of others. If we can listen to when God speaks God's truth, we can surely listen when our fellow earthlings speak theirs. And so the lesson of Anochi Hashem Elokecha is not just about Hashem, but also is what gives meaning to the idea of Ahato Re'echa Kamocha, to acknowledge that every other human being also needs that recognition of you exist, you are important, and I have a relationship with you as well. And that's where he ends his look at this first commandment that really subsumes all the other ones in it as well. I think that was a great thought.
It's also interesting because it kind of ties together the rest of the Dibrot, because there's some about with God and then there's some about, you know, like Ben Adam Lamacham, Ben Adam Lachaveros. So it's nice because he's saying this is all.
And that you can look at Rav Huttner in the Pachad Yitzchak on Shavuos talks about how that the Ben Adam Lamakam also subsumes with it the Ben Adam Lachavero. It takes a slightly different direction than this, but this is the idea that we learn from Hashem that everyone needs to be recognized as an end, not a means, as Kant would put it.
What's the leap? I didn't get the leap. How do we learn that? How do we learn that everyone needs to be recognized?
Because Hashem needs to be recognized. And Kal Vachomer.
Oh.
Everyone.
Okay.
Okay, it's that like, we should realize that if God, who created the universe, has this need, in quotes, which go backwards, for recognition, really that everyone, all the rest of us who are there just, we're all trying to imitate God here, but we need to have that, everyone else needs recognition as well, needs acknowledgement. Everyone needs someone else to say, needs someone else's dignity. Needs someone else to recognize their dignity, rather. And so all the Torah comes out of this one basic principle. So yes, the Bahag is right as well, that this isn't so much commandment as a meta-commandment, that everything else comes from Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzivtich Emeret Yisrael.
Yeah.
And I will stop recording, and thank you very much for